Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 469, titled The Schmitzes, Republican Family Values. This is being recorded on July 18th of the year 2004. Before getting into the major part of the program, let me remind you that all of the broadcasts and lectures I've done over the years are available from a tape duplication, CD duplication service called Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, one word. You can reach them by regular mail at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, two words, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, 95005. Email, mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. And on the Spitfire website, in the For the Record section, which, by the way, is equipped with real audio and features the two most recent For the Record half-hour segments, in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website, there are detailed, annotated, article-length descriptions available, and usually within a week or two after the airing of this broadcast. Be aware that these descriptions often contain information that were not in the original broadcasts due to the limitations of time, so please be aware of that. Note that the Spitfire website is now equipped with a search function, and be aware also that the landmark text, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, by the late heroic Paul Manning, is available for download. On the Spitfire website, and it is available for free. Sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on real audio. More recent programs are streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, DAVEEMORY. Older programs are available for download only at a longer URL linked to both the www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery website and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. Now, to the main substance of the broadcast. This broadcast, again, is titled The Schmitzes, Republican Family Values. What we're going to be looking at is the life and times and the values and the progeny of the late John Schmitz. He was a member of the House of Representatives, also served in the California State Legislature, and he was too far right-wing for the John Birch Society, which will give you some idea of where this guy is coming from. I'm going to be reading a number of articles, some of them web articles, some of them, actually all of this material is from the web, but we're going to be reading about John Schmitz's life, about his career, about his political philosophy, and about his own family values as practiced. Some of the high points that we're going to be talking about here, first of all, note the extreme right-wing nature of his politics. Note the intrusion of Germania, so to speak, intrusion is the wrong word. Note the presence of Germania, things German and in many cases, for all practical purposes, Nazi, in the career of not only John Schmitz, but notice how these things creep in around the edges, or sometimes more than the edges, of the lives of his children. That is worth taking note of here. We're going to be taking a look at the extent to which John Schmitz assumed the mantle of the late Representative James B. Utt. James B. Utt was an extremely right-wing Southern California congressman who was, among other things, a sponsor of the late Andrija Artukovic, who was the interior minister for the fascist Croatian puppet state in World War II. His nickname was the Himmler of the Balkans. He jumped to the U.S. at the end of World War II, went to work for U.S. intelligence, and was one of the major Balkan war criminals of World War II. His presence in Southern California, which went without interruption, was due in part to the interference run for him by the late James B. Utt, whose legislative mantle was assumed by John Schmitz. We're going to take a look at John Schmitz's political views. We're also going to take a look again at his family. We're going to take a look at the fact that he had a German mistress who bore him children out of wedlock, including one child who appeared to have been deliberately sexually tortured or mutilated, and one can only guess as to why that took place. We're also going to take a look at the career of his son, John Schmitz Jr. And John Schmitz Jr. has achieved a great deal more notoriety than his father. He was the special deputy counsel to the elder George Bush, both when he was vice president and when he was president. He is a counsel with a German-based international law firm that, among other things, is representing the United Airlines company in lawsuits against them by survivors of the 9/11 attacks. He is representing the Bayer company, which is very interesting indeed, because Bayer is the manufacturer of Cipro. And among the questions we're going to be looking at here is how come members of the White House staff were taking Cipro from the days of September 11th on, when in theory at least anthrax attacks were not known until almost a month later. Among the other clients of John Schmitz Jr. are Deutsche Bank, which appears to have been involved in some of the securities speculation in the run-up to September 11th, and over the course of his career, John Schmitz has represented a great many German and reactionary American interests. Looming in the background of the many clients and activities of John Schmitz Jr., and perhaps John Schmitz Sr., is the Underground Reich. We're also going to be taking a look at Mary Kay Letourneau, who was the daughter of the elder John Schmitz and the brother of John Schmitz Jr. She is a Seattle school teacher who achieved a great deal of notoriety some years back when gave birth to two children by one of her sixth grade students. Which is more than interesting under the circumstances, and she actually defended this behavior. So again, that is a rundown of what we're going to be talking about in this broadcast. Again, 469, the Schmitzes, Republican Family Values. We're going to begin by taking a look at an internet obituary for the late John Schmitz when he passed away. This is titled, John Schmitz, Too Right-Wing for John Birch Society, Beset by Scandal, and the URL for this will be available in the description for the record program 469. This reads, in one version of the philosophy of modern politics, liberalism assumes the perfectibility of the individual, while conservatism assumes human nature is hopelessly flawed. Liberals created a welfare state to allow individuals to perfect themselves without the constraints of want, while conservatives erected prisons and urged the populace to adopt, quote, family values, unquote, that would domesticate the savage beast. It's a bleak landscape whether one is sipping cheap, NEA-funded Chablis, or sitting in a lockdown. What greater delight is there for a publicly funded, gossipy liberal than the discovery that a conservative demagogue and defender of, quote, the family, unquote, is in fact an adulterer whose life abounded with scandal? The death of former Congressman John G. Schmitz is, of course, a moment for reflection on how human fallibility will lead us all into error. But in a more profound note, reflection that hearty guffaws at the expense of a dead a-hole hypocrite are some of the best laughs of all. John G. Schmitz served in the House of Representatives and ran for President and the Senate. He was the kind of pure reactionary who surfaces occasionally on the national stage and leaves the mainstream gasping for breath. But at the height of the welfare state, the 1972 presidential election, he garnered 1 million votes. Quote, I lost the presidency by a mere 44 million votes, he said, in what was perhaps the least offensive joke he made in his entire life. Schmitz was born in Wisconsin and studied philosophy at Marquette University. His hero was Wisconsin's gift to the Assembly Clause Senator Joseph McCarthy. He became a pilot in the Marines. By 1960, he was teaching a class called Communist Propaganda Techniques at a Marine base in Southern California. He also taught political science at Santa Ana College, where he remained a popular and charismatic lecturer until his retirement in the early 1990s. He first came to public notice in 1962 when he disarmed a man who was assaulting a woman with a knife by the side of the road, wielding only the sheer authority of his voice. The victim died, but Schmitz was elected to the California State Senate in 1964, in part on his reputation as a hero. The remainder was pure Orange County John Birch Society reactionary conservatism. Schmitz found he had a great talent for garnering controversy merely by opening his mouth. He called the Watts riots a year later a communist operation, unquote. In 1968, he said California Governor Ronald Reagan was unsuitable for president because Reagan had abandoned conservative principles. He said, quote, Jews are like everybody else, only more so, unquote. Schmitz was anti-immigrant, anti-women's lib, anti-communist, anti-black, anti-homo. He named his dog Kaiser and thought that giving a Hitler salute was a good joke. In June of 1970, still in the state Senate, Schmitz won a special election to fill the seat left vacant by the reactionary Representative James B. Ott, who had died in office. By the way, that was the fellow who sponsored Andrea Artukovich, as I mentioned in the introduction of the show. Continuing, he won the regular 1970 election as well and moved his family to Washington. His tiny reactionary stone created barely a ripple in the great pond of Congress. His politics alienated even his most prominent constituent, President Richard Nixon of San Clemente, California. When Nixon went to China, Schmitz quipped, quote, "I have no objection to President Nixon going to China. I just object to his coming back," unquote. This didn't just sink him in the eyes of Nixon and the Republican Party. His own constituents abandoned him, and Schmitz was not nominated to run for the House seat in 1972. His loss in the primary led Schmitz to seek the highest office in the land on the American Independent Party the same year. The party was originally a vehicle for George Wallace's second know-nothing assault on the two-party system, but Wallace dropped out after an assassin's bullet left him crippled. When Schmitz's lackluster presidential bid garnered only 1 million votes nationwide, he noted that this was more votes than George Washington had ever received. Then, he slunk back to lick his wounds and teach embittered civics lessons to credulous conservatives in training at Santa Ana. By 1978, he was back in the California State Senate making trouble and saying things so outrageous that even the John Birch Society kicked him out. When Reagan was elected president, Schmitz was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Quote, "A good military coup might be the best we could hope for if President Reagan's policies are not successful. A lot of people can't imagine anything like that happening in our country. These same people could never imagine themselves stealing to stay alive," unquote. In 1982, a committee he chaired held hearings on abortion, after which his office issued a press release titled, "Senator Schmitz and his committee survive attack of the bull dykes," unquote. It described pro-choice supporters as, quote, "a sea of hard, Jewish, and arguably female faces," unquote. Feminist attorney Gloria Allred, a wife and mother who had testified at the hearing, sued for $10 million for defamation. In settlement, Schmitz was forced to pay $20,000 and issue a statement that read in part, quote, "I apologize to Gloria Allred and to all others who may have been wrongly characterized. I have never considered her to be a slick, butch lawyeress," unquote. The same year, he announced his candidacy for the U.S. Senate, and he stood at a podium with Yasser Arafat by his side. Surveying the room of reporters, he snarled, "Hello, all you commies," unquote. Parenthetically, one wonders why he would have had Yasser Arafat at his side. Arafat is not normally considered a luminary by Republican right-wingers, but Yasser Arafat, of course, is not only a protege and nephew of the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, he's also a protege of the late Otto Skorzeny, SS colonel and primary Odessa operative, and of course he is an implacable enemy of the Israelis. So one wonders whether Schmitz's evident anti-Semitism had something to do with his affinity for Yasser Arafat. Continuing with the article, but the man who saw conspiracies everywhere, who was an equal opportunity bigot, and who decried America's moral decrepitude, had himself a skeleton in the closet. It came to light in a curious way. An Orange County child abuse case in 1982 concerned a 13-month-old infant who was discovered with hair so tightly wound around his penis that the organ had nearly been severed. The baby was placed in protective custody, and the court demanded that the father step forward. It turned out to be none other than John G. Schmitz, now again a state senator, paterfamilias of 5 children and, 2 others with his German mistress, once his student at Santa Ana. It marked the end of Schmitz's political career, although he did attempt to run for Congress once more. The charges against the mother were eventually dropped and the infant restored to her care. But it was never explained what was going on with the hair-wound penis. One historian has suggested that it was, quote, a mysterious sex or probably anti-sex ritual, as if a chastity device, unquote. Schmitz, feisty as ever, remarked, quote, I ought to get the Right to Life Man of the Year award for this. In a scandal that broke years later, Mary Kay Letourneau, the notorious Seattle schoolteacher who bore two babies with a young teenage student, turned out to be Schmitz's daughter. Her boy lover, a Samoan, was said to be mature for his years. Perhaps he had been reading that arch-liberal Margaret Mead on his own customs. Quote, "Can't you understand that this is not a story about me?" an unrepentant Letourneau told George magazine, again quoting, "It's a story of two remarkable men," unquote. Those would be her 13-year-old student and her domineering father, both of whom Letourneau loved beyond reason. Schmitz researched the Samoan Treaty to see if there was something in it that could save her from prison. There wasn't. As the Letourneau case played out in the national media, the Schmitz household was revealed to have been a chilly place, often under siege due to John's latest atrocious remark. Mary Kay and her brother would sometimes play German marching music out the window to drown out angry demonstrators. Schmitz's wife Mary was said to be said by Mary Kay to be an unaffectionate mother who stressed personal appearance, counseling her daughter always to wear lipstick and even toenail polish. Mary was a vocal ally of Phyllis Schlafly and appeared on TV to denounce the ERA. She stuck with her man to the end. After dropping out of politics, Schmitz went back to indoctrinating the youth of California and pretty much stayed out of sight except for a brief bid for Congress in 1984, in which he was defeated by B1 Bob Dornan. When the Letourneau scandal erupted in 1994, he had retired from academia and was discovered working at a souvenir stand at Washington, D.C.'s Union Station. He had purchased the home of his hero, Joseph McCarthy. Quote, "I don't talk to reporters anymore," were his unwitty and last recorded words for a public hungry for the thoughts of a fallen paragon. Again, not an overview of the public and personal life of John G. Schmitz. It is very interesting to see the radical departures on the part of Schmitz from what are generally considered to be traditional Republican family values, not only siring a number of children out of wedlock by his German mistress, but also the bizarre episode where a hair was wound around his infant son's penis so tightly that the organ was almost severed. One wonders just exactly what that was all about, and this is pure conjecture. Might it have been some sort of mind control technique? Because some of the more profound and insidious mind control techniques do involve sexual torture and manipulation, but that's pure conjecture. Note the hints of Germania around the career of John G. Schmitz. Note his penchant for giving the Hitler salute, naming his dog Kaiser, his doctrinarily anti-Semitic views. Note the fact that when demonstrators would marshal outside the house, Mary Kay Letourneau, then his daughter, and with a different last name, would play German marching music out the window. Note also that his hero was Joseph McCarthy. In RFA program number 2, we talked about some of the pro-Nazi activities of Joseph McCarthy and the pro-Hitler sympathies of some of the people who had bankrolled his career, such as Frank Sensenbrenner and Walter Harnischfeger, two of the primary financiers of Joseph McCarthy's Senate career. In RFA number 37, we looked at the fact that Joseph McCarthy's purges of governments, supposedly of people who were deemed communist, made use of intelligence that came from a group of SS officers, which had been marshaled by a fellow named John Frenchy Grombach, he's a former military intelligence person, who in turn was relying on a network of SS men that had been put together by Karl Wolff, the SS general who was Heinrich Himmler's personal adjutant. We're going to see some of these hints of Germania growing more profound in the career of John Schmitz's son. By the way, research credit for all of the material that I'm using on this broadcast goes to a member of the listening audience. The following is titled Republican Family Values Sex Criminals. It's by somebody who writes under the name of Zizka, and it's available at www.johnjemerson.com. This article is going to recapitulate many of the things that we looked at in the first story, and also is going to begin to introduce evidence about the career of John Schmitz's son. That's John P. Schmitz. Over the past several decades, we Democrats have had to get used to repeated accusations that we are immoral and evil and responsible for everything bad in the world, The Clinton impeachment was the culmination of this. I think it's time to turn the guns around. Back in 1994, on the eve of a midterm election, House Speaker Newt Gingrich used the horrifying case of Susan Smith, who had killed her two young children in hopes of being united with her lover, as evidence that the Democrats were ruining the country, saying, quote, "How a mother can kill her two children, 14 months and 3 years, in hopes that her boyfriend would like her, is just a sign of how sick the system is, and I think people want to change. The only way you get change is to vote Republican," unquote. Gingrich's charge that Smith's murder of her children had something to do with the Democratic Party was deluded and slanderous from the start, and most thought that capitalizing politically on such a horrible event was disgusting. This did not keep the media from publicizing his claim, however, and for all anyone knows, Gingrich's smear tipped some votes the Republicans' way. In any case, the election was a big victory for Newt. Only after the election did the real facts come out. Susan Smith's stepfather, Beverly Russell, was far from a Democrat. He was a figure of some importance in the South Carolina Republican Party and in Pat Robertson's Christian coalition. This revelation alone invalidated Gingrich's ludicrous argument, but on top of this, it turned out that Russell had been molesting Smith for years, starting when Smith was in her middle teens. Oddly enough, when the reality became known, the media mostly dropped the story. Imaginary and wildly false charges against Democrats are okay, but when actual facts show up implicating Republicans, then it's time to show restraint and good taste and consideration for the family's feelings. You can go and figure this one out for yourself. As we know, bizarre and creepy family life is actually quite common among conservatives. For Exhibit B, let's look at the Schmitz family of Southern California, the most famous member of which is Mary Kay Letourneau, a married schoolteacher and mother now in prison for sexual abuse of a sixth-grade student by whom she has borne two children, one conceived while she was out on parole. Quote, "Can't you understand this is not a story about me?" an unrepentant Letourneau told George Magazine. "It's a story of two remarkable men. Those would be her 13-year-old student and her domineering father, both of whom Letourneau loved beyond reason." Letourneau's father was John G. Schmitz, a John Birch Society member who served in the California State Senate as a Republican from 1964 to 1970, and in Congress from 1970 to 1972. In 1972, he ran from the right for president against Nixon, getting about 1 million votes. This did not keep him from returning to the California State Senate as a Republican from 1978 to 1982. In 1984, he ran for Congress but was defeated by Bob Dornan, who for once in his life could pose as a moderate. Unsurprisingly, Schmitz's personal ethics were hardly congruent with his pious political rhetoric. His political career was ended mostly by the revelation that, besides his public family values family, five children, he had another secret family consisting of a German ex-student of his and two more children. In a bizarre twist, their infant son was found by child welfare agents to have a peculiarly mutilated penis, the reasons for which were never explained. His comment on all this was simply, quote, "I ought to get the Right to Life Man of the Year Award for this," unquote. After retiring from his other career in teaching, Schmitz moved to the Washington, D.C. area where he bought a house which had once belonged to Senator Joe McCarthy of Wisconsin, his political idol. And then we're going to take a brief look at John Schmitz's son, John P. Schmitz, John P. Schmitz. And we're going to take a much longer look at the career of John P. Schmitz inside, too. There's still another chapter to the story. John G. Schmitz's son, John P. Schmitz, did not share his father's disdain for George Bush, whom he served as deputy counsel from 1984 to 1993. He was involved in Iran-Contra as a deputy to C. Boyden Gray and as an associate of Janet Rehnquist. Schmitz was one of the few Iran-Contra players to refuse to be interviewed by the independent counsel, and was highly instrumental, as was Rehnquist, by the way, that's the daughter of Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, William Rehnquist. Beginning again, Schmitz was one of the few Iran-Contra players to refuse to be interviewed by the independent counsel, and was highly instrumental, as was Rehnquist, in protecting Bush. Bush was never questioned, and a diary he kept was never examined. Walsh's final report read, "The criminal investigation of Bush was regrettably incomplete." Chapter 28, second paragraph. Since then, John P. Schmitz has popped up every once in a while. He seems to have had dealings with Iraq before the Gulf War, and with his present law firm has worked for Enron, Bayer, producer of Cipro, and United Airlines 9/11 lawsuit. His firm also has a Central Asian office in Tashkent. Schmitz, along with many men of high repute, is a member of the boards of directors of the American Council on Germany and the Atlantic Council of the U.S. Some may ask why I'm willing to get down in the gutter with these guys. The answer is that right now I'm playing the game the way it's played, but that I'm more than willing to declare a truce, although somehow I just don't think that's going to happen. Democrats and liberals have been having S-blank-blank-blank flicked at us pretty continually now for decades, and people should know that there's plenty of S-blank-blank-blank on both sides. It would be nice if our conservative Christian friends suddenly came to be filled with the milk of human kindness, or even if they started to play fair, but it would also be nice if Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy were real. So far as I'm concerned, it should be an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth from here on out, or at least until the Tooth Fairy shows up. And inside two of the program, we're going to be taking a much longer look at the career of John P. Schmitz, who I think is the more important member of the family and has exhibited some very, very interesting family values indeed. The various lectures and programs I've done over the years are available from a CD duplication service called Spitfire. That's S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, one word. You can reach them by regular mail at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. The email address for Spitfire is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Visit the Real Audio-equipped Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. It's equipped with Real Audio, and the latest pair of half-hour segments are available for a week or so after they've been recorded. And note that the For the Record section of the Spitfire website contains detailed, annotated, article-length descriptions of the various For the Record programs. Those are usually up within a week or two of the airing of the broadcasts. Be aware, too, that often the descriptions of the programs contain information that is not included in the original broadcast due to the limitations of time. The Spitfire website is equipped with a search function and also now contains the landmark text Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by the late heroic Paul Manning, available for download for free. And that text is essential for a thorough grasp of the information I'm presenting in these broadcasts. Sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older programs are available for download only on a longer URL that is linked both to the www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery website and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. And by the way, listeners are emphatically encouraged to download as much of the printed and audio information as available as possible, both the audio information from WFMU and the printed information from the SpitfireList.com website, and to acquire their own body of information, basically to start their own digital library and database. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 469, titled The Schmitzes, Republican Family Values. This is being recorded on July 18th of the year 2004. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.